'cause God is a Republican.
And he wants armed guards at the doors. How crazy is that? Jeez. A new report out by researchers at Johns Hopkins University Medical School. They point out that gun injuries, including many from assaults, sent 75,000 kids here in the U.S., children and teenagers, to the emergency rooms over the last 9 years at a cost of about $3 billion. In fact, each year, you're talking about 8,300 children who go to emergency rooms with gun-related injuries. They point out that 11 out of every 100,000 children or teenagers treated at an emergency room in the U.S. have a gun-related injury. And yet we don't need to do anything on the gun front. And like I said, my kids, sadly, and it's really just, I'm struggling with it. Didn't show much. Okay, there was another shooting. Another one. Another weekend, another shooting. And I fear we're becoming desensitized to it. It's scary, scary stuff. That's why I've asked Ben Jackson to come talk with us. Dad of the decade. He's a journalist with Pat Not Part. He also does some work with the No RA for USA. Ben, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I'm glad to be here, although I got to tell you, I am so angry I could pop.
As we all should be. And as I said at the beginning, if you're not actively seeking and to change things, if you're not condemning this president and this administration and anybody who justifies the divisive language and this enemy of the people thing, and all of this, you're part of the problem. No more thoughts and prayer nonsense. No more, oh, well, you know. No, you're part of the problem if you're not speaking out against it.
Yeah, there is no way that this should be normalized. You know, this is something that I can't imagine another time, certainly in modern American history, where we could have a government that, for the sake of a few bucks maybe and a few people's paychecks on a tax cut, is willing to put up with the hate and the divisiveness and now the deadly danger that is coming out of our government. You know, our president is encouraging war on his own people, and I don't know where it stops at this point. You know,
no, you're right.
That it's a, what's the line? Where can he get to that we've crossed a point that we finally say too much?
And I don't think there is a point. I think there's no depth to his depravity. And look, he needs this divisiveness because look, he understands. You know, his fringe. They're well armed and not afraid to go using it. And what I love is they play the victim card so well. I mean, when Kellyanne Conway went on and said, well, you know, these are religious people and it's those TV hosts, those liberals who are putting down people of religion. And I'm going, look, I have great respect for honest people of faith. It's these extreme radicals that I have a problem with, these hypocrites who, you know, tell us one thing and then do something else. I have a problem with that, absolutely.
Right. You know, I went back earlier today and I looked at a YouTube ad that NRA TV put out earlier this year, and it was Dana Loesch, and she starts out saying, they tell their media and in their schools, and they go out and protest. And beneath that, they're showing images of people of color protesting against violence against people of color and making it appear that these people are rioting. They highlight the media. Every single group that has been targeted, celebrities, liberals, were called out as enemies of the state by the gun-toting, gun-selling NRA, specifically this year, and ending that ad with her saying the only way to fight this is with the clenched fist of truth. I mean, they are using the language of fascism. They are using the language of hate to sell guns, to sell fear, and it's literally coming back to kill us now. You know, one of the things that I see all of the time from that side online is people telling us to go to our safe spaces and hide. Well, you know what? They're shooting us in our safe spaces now. We can't go to school. We can't go to church. We can't go to synagogue. We can't go to the mall. We can't go to the movies. We can't go on military bases. And it's because of the divisiveness of this president, this administration, the NRA, and those that spend so much money backing them using this language that we are now at the point where there is no safe space.
And this isn't new. Look, this has been going on for years. We're just now hitting that point to where somewhere near the top of it, where those of us of conscience are saying, you know, no more. Look, I've tiptoed around, you know, with the Second Amendment people. And look, I believe if you want to protect your home, fine, well and good. But you don't need a freaking arsenal. And we don't need assault weapons. And you don't need weapons of mass. You don't need this stuff. You want to protect your home, a shotgun or a dog is the best way to protect your home.
Right. And, you know, you're right. This isn't new. This is something that's been happening for a long time. But what's different about it is when you look back at, say, look at the militia movement and the Oklahoma City bombing in 1996, is that everybody on the political spectrum stood up and rejected it immediately. They said, this is not who we are as a nation. And now we have a political class, the political elite, that embrace it, that, you know, that stand up and speak its language because it garners them political power. And that's really disgusting. But then you take that into an armed society where we now have more guns than people in this country, where we have a weapon in the AR-15 and its similar weapons that is specifically designed to kill as many people as quickly as possible, that really isn't a hunting weapon, that isn't a home defense weapon, and that leads to people who are shot with these guns don't survive to reach medical care. And in the few that do survive to reach medical care, that medical care is often ineffective. And you can look at two shootings in South Florida in the last couple of years. One is the Parkland High School shooting, which the shooter used an AR-15. And the folks who made it with critical injuries to the hospital who survived that long did not survive. And then a little bit before that, we had the Fort Lauderdale Airport shooting in South Florida. The weapon used there was a handgun. Six people were shot and wounded. All six of those people survived when they got to the hospital. This is a weapon that we do not need and that we are selling more and more and more of in this time of militarizing the extremes of our political culture. It's deadly.
So how do you go back to that? I mean, you know, the there are those who argue, well, the cat's out of the bag. Everyone went and they bought them because, hey, Obama was coming for the guns. So we had to rush out and we had to buy all the guns and all the ammunition. We had to create arsenals and everybody. And I know people who have guns and rice buried all over this area that I live in because they think, you know, the race war is coming, the next civil war is coming, you name whichever it is, you know, the fear is there. And and they're preparing for it because my kids are going to eat your kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head when you talked about fear, because this is what generates this whole thing, is that one side in particular sells fear. And people, when they are afraid of the other, whether that's the government, whether that's people of color, whether that's refugees, whether, you know, that's this myth of MS-13, when people are afraid, they make stupid decisions. Okay, so that's the first part. And then facts no longer weigh in when you're afraid. You act on your feelings, you act on your instincts. And that's what we see to a large degree coming out of political messaging. So we have to rein that in. And the way we do that first and foremost right now is we vote next Tuesday. And I don't care if you are a Democrat, a Republican, an independent. You know, I actually believe that almost everybody in this country rejects what's coming out of that leadership and says this is not representative of who we are. And the only way that they can take that back, where the right can reclaim the Republican Party, is to vote against the people currently in power in that party and say, you've gone too far. So the first thing everyone can do is vote against this. But then beyond that, there are specific legislative things that we can do. You know, you look at the things like an assault weapons ban. It's harder now because we have a lot more out of there, but it's constitutional, it's legal, and it works. And we saw that happen throughout the 1990s into the early part of the 2000s when we did have an assault weapons ban. Guess what? We didn't see them being used in the way that they're being used right now. They weren't, we didn't have this sort of militarization fetish that exist to a large degree. So we can do things like that. We can, limit ammunition, magazine capacity. We can limit the number of guns somebody can buy over a period of time. No one needs to be able to buy 20 guns in a month. No one needs to be able to buy 20 guns in a year. I think, if we could say, hey, let's limit our gun purchases to one a month, right? Then you can cut down on gun trafficking. You cut down on these illegal guns that are out in the culture there that are being used in crime. So there are specific things we can do, but the very first thing we have to do is nationally reject this deadly and dangerous divisiveness coming from the current leaders on the right. We just have to do it.
Yeah. And what about, there's some who are saying, we need to figure out how to rein in, like a Twitter, for instance, the hate rhetoric that is there, the hate speech that we've seen. Because, look, I'm a big free speech advocate. I do this. I want to be able to speak freely. But, there's a place where you go, some of the hateful rhetoric that we've seen come out, not just, from extreme right-wing fanatics, but, from this president almost. There's at some point, you can't yell fire in a theater. I don't know that you should be saying, hey, people in the caravan, we're going to send the military down to the border and they're waiting for you. I don't know.
Right. And, it's going to take somebody smarter than me to figure out exactly how to fix that.
Right.
But I think we're seeing some interesting things happen in the free market, right? This is capitalism at work right now, where you saw Gab shut down today because companies that were providing the technical aspects that allowed it to function, PayPal and other payment processors, GoDaddy and domain registrars, said, we want no part of this. And for your listeners who don't know what Gab was, it's basically a social network for people who have been kicked out of other social networks because their views are so extreme.
Right.
They, they claim that they're this big free speech platform, and yet they are crying right now for the president to come after GoDaddy and PayPal and these folks who have said, we're not going to do business with you, exercising their own First Amendment rights and saying, we don't want to tolerate this hate. They're working very hard to make sure that white supremacists and anti-Semites are allowed a platform. And that's what Gab is.
Right.
And that's where the shooter from Pittsburgh posted his views and his tweet saying, I'm going in with on Gab. And that's basically what Gab is.
Yeah, and think about this. For me, I don't want to cut you off, but think about when GoDaddy is the conscience of the country.
Right.
As bad as they have been and their owner has been over the years, when that's the conscience of the country, we're pretty far down the path.
Yeah, I agreed. And although I will give them the props that they deserve on this one, and that
I'm with
that,
you.
This is too far. And I think that that's maybe the line is where you say when businesses say this is too far, that's pretty far down. And I do also think that we need to make a really clear distinction in free speech in that that there is speech that is distasteful and that is offensive, and then there is speech that is deadly and dangerous. And we already regulate that speech. There's a theory of fighting words, and these are things that create imminent danger. Things like yelling fire in a theater or I'm going to kill you, right? Those are things that you can't actually say without some potential legal consequences. We restrict that speech, and we can continue to do that. The question is, how do we manage that on a platform like Twitter that has, billions of tweets being sent on a daily basis? And I don't know. But we've got to be better at it. That said, I think that as people, we can reject that. We cannot interact with it. We cannot fall prey to that baiting type of communication that we all like to get riled up and yell back at and ultimately encouraged by reacting to it. But there's got to be a better tech solution and a better policing solution than we have right now.
No, I'm with you because, it's clear that some of us can't handle it.
Right, right. There's sort of that idea of this is why we can't have nice things. And this is absolutely true that the ability to hide who you are gives the worst people among us the freedom to say the worst things that come into their mind without a lot of consequences. And maybe that's what it is we need to find a way to identify the people that are making these horrible things. And I think we do see that to some degree,
right,
in crowdsourcing with some of these videos of people who are doing horrible racist things, and it's being videoed and going viral, and these people are losing their jobs, and rightfully so, for espousing these beliefs that we do not accept as a society. And maybe there's a way to do that, legally online, and identify who these people are. But again, as you do that, you run into real danger of endangering people for putting out their identities, and that's not a path we want to go down. So we've got to have people fixing it, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, but what do you say to the person? Because, I remember I worked with a guy. He was a friend for many years when we worked together. He grew up in the 50s in Georgia, a black guy who, he said he preferred it back then to where someone would just walk up to you and, call you whatever name they were going to call you instead of, these kind of niceties and, all the people who you say, all these people around here will smile to my face but stab me into the back. It was his belief. He wanted you to wear your hatred or your biases out on your sleeve so we knew who you were. And I look at the guy who, sent the bombs. This was a guy who was literally driving around in a hate wagon.
Yeah.
When they tell us who we are, why don't we believe them? Why don't we, why is there no way of going, hey, there's something wrong with that guy. Maybe, I don't know, maybe we should look into that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. On the other hand, I think that this is both what makes us great and what makes us, where we're testing the bounds of who we are as a culture right now, in that we have a fundamental belief that you are not guilty of a crime until you have committed that crime, right? And so driving around with this hate wagon around, that guy should have been investigated, but could we have intervened in a way that would have prevented this? Probably, but I don't know what that is,
yeah.
Right? Like we can say, this guy's a problem. That guy should have been on the law enforcement's radar. He had, Hillary Clinton with crosshairs over her. He should have been on the Secret Service's radar, and he wasn't. And that's where we failed to some degree in law enforcement. But I think what we need to address much more urgently than that is, how did he get to that point?
Right.
What was it that enabled him to think that this was a normal worldview?
You had
the same idea with the shooter in Pittsburgh, where he said, I can't allow these people to allow an invasion of my country. I'm going in. How do we get to that point? That's where we need to fix it.
No, and later on when we have Propane Jane on, a psychiatrist from Houston, I'm going to ask her those very questions. How do you get, because to me, the fact, there is no one, and there is literally no one who I would take a picture of and put crosshairs over.
No.
Not something that I would do.
And in fact, if I saw that of people that I look at as the biggest danger to this country, I would intervene on their behalf. I can't imagine how you get to that point.
Exactly. And I want to know how you get from, where you go, you would never do that, to where it's perfectly okay and normal. And it's something that I struggle with it. So,
right.
But let me ask you, because as I said at the beginning of this, and this is where I want to kind of finish this up, because I believe we have to condemn this in the strongest of terms. What suggestions do you have for people? Do you have thoughts on, how we come together? We are a very divided society right now, and I argue our commander-in-chief is the master divider. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think, we have to look to this election next week. That's the very first thing we have to do, and we have to say, and honestly, I've not seen this, but if anyone has seen a candidate on the left that is using divisive rhetoric like this, they should vote against that person for the other side. But for any candidate who has not fundamentally denounced the rhetoric coming out of the White House that enables this, you cannot vote for that candidate. That's the very first thing we have to do, is we just have to reject the deadly language. And then after that, I think we need to be better in our communities. We need to talk to the people we encounter face-to-face, and maybe step away from the people we encounter on social media. It's a lot harder to hate somebody you know and you've had a conversation with. And the reality is that most of the time we have negative interactions, you know, it's because we haven't had a chance to have that conversation with somebody in person.
Yeah.
And the violence is done to people by people in their communities. So if we are at our local level, in our towns, in our schools, in our churches, in our synagogues, in our mosques, in our libraries, we are talking to each other that aren't part of our echo chamber and talking to them as humans and not as opponents, that's where we start. You know, and I think we need to start having those discussions very seriously, in a real meaningful way very soon, or I don't know how we come back from this.
I'm with you. Ben, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Always great talk with you. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Sounds great. Thanks so much, Rick.
Oh, as always, our good friend Ben Jackson. You won't follow him on Twitter at Dad of the Decade. Good stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.